about Śrīla Bhakti, a little tiny seed of Śrīla Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's teachings in the context of hearing about how he was delivering the science of Krishna. And today, these two prana mantras, as we heard them yesterday, they reflect two significant aspects of this very great personality's gift to humanity. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, who delivered devotional service which is enriched with conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation from Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. And the second prana mantra, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls, but you do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of devotional service enunciated by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. So we were going to share again some of the words of Śrīla Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in relationship to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and what does it mean, the line enunciated by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. So Śrī Krishna Chaitanya is no different than Krishna. It is Krishna who has come in this form. And he has appeared in the world in this form as Śrī Krishna Chaitanya because he desires the deliverance of all the souls who are trapped in the difficulties and complexities of this particular age in which we are now living, the age of Kali. It is an age wherein people become weaker and weaker in every way. Their mercy, forgetfulness, strength, everything will actually diminish as time goes by, and they will become more and more dependent on things such as technology, which we all see that we are already obliged, forced to accept as a very real part of everybody's life. If we don't keep up, then we won't get benefit from life living here in this world. Technology, argument, quarrel, it is called the Iron Age. There are different metals and they're not of the same value. So there's gold, then there's silver, then there's bronze, and then there's iron. And iron is not of the same value as gold. So this age is called the Iron Age. And it's the age also of, as we heard yesterday, commercialism, technology. These are all aspects which people pride themselves on. And so in this age it's very, very, very difficult to actually understand the teachings of Krishna, to practice them. And especially it is almost impossible to approach and properly understand the loving relationship between Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So I have brought these little dioramas here to Melbourne, and we will speak about them further tomorrow, and we'll speak further about this principle of rasa, or transcendental taste and emotion. But within them you see that in the two, at least the first and the third one, you see there is Radha and Krishna together. And they are playfully enacting their various leelas. So this male and female, this is here within this material world. Everybody is enamored by the male-female principle. You can see either legitimately, legally or illegally, everybody. This is the driving force of the material world. Not only with human beings, but with all creatures. They have to have the male seeks the female and the female seeks the male. This happens quite naturally. But what we don't understand is that this exists also within God. Otherwise, how can it exist within us? Where does it come from? We enjoy in this way, but we think that sometimes one thinks that God, he has no such enjoyment. Because sometimes people think there is some impurity in this kind of enjoyment, and this certainly couldn't be there within the spiritual, all pure personality. But then where does it come from? Where does this male, female come from? So in the teachings of the Vedic scriptures, we understand that Krishna, there are three energies, Sat, Chit and Ananda. Sat meaning the principle energy of eternality. Chit meaning that of cognition, consciousness, awareness, knowledge. And Ananda meaning the principle of enjoyment or happiness. So Srimati Radharani personifies, is the personification of this Ladini Shakti, this energy of the Lord, pleasure-giving potency. She is that. And Krishna himself, he represents this chit or cognition potency. And Baladev, Krishna's brother, associated counterpart, he represents this knowledge, the energy of eternality. And from this comes all of creation, because the material world that we see is so real and so wonderful, and we hear about and study, and everything we do in life is something to do with this material world. This is an emanation from the Supreme Personality, and it is considered to be inferior. So we don't like to think that what we have here is inferior, but if we turn it in a different mind, we can ask, inferior to what? If this is inferior and it's so fascinating and enjoyable, then what is it actually in the inferior nature? What is the superior nature like? So the superior nature is wherein everybody is, their consciousness is completely transcendentally purified. And in the superior nature, all the living entities, the souls there, they don't come within the grip of birth and death. Their bodies and their transcendental love of Krishna and their whole existence is completely pure. And we all have this within ourselves. It is not that we don't have something somebody else has, but it can become covered. So this is a long subject matter which we won't go into, otherwise we will miss our opportunity because we have only a short time. But it is very important to understand Lord Chaitanya, that he is Krishna himself. He is the combined form of Radha and Krishna, the male-female principle, combined in the form of Lord Chaitanya. And he appears with is Krishna in the mood, with the sentiments of Srimati Radharani. This is an inconceivability. And he is seeking himself. Lord Chaitanya plays the part, it's Krishna playing the part of a devotee to give us the opportunity so we can understand how we too can develop devotional sentiments by his mercy. So the first thing I would like to read is about Lord Chaitanya. There was a time when Sri Gaurasunda, Lord Chaitanya, in the course of his pilgrimage to different parts of India, had instructed the people with these words. He said, "Whomsoever you meet, instruct him about Krishna. Deliver this country by becoming guru by my command." At that time, the question arose in our minds as to how we were to discourse regarding the supreme object of desire if we were not ourselves fully self-realized souls. So we can think like this, how can I do that? How can I propose to take such a position? Thereupon Sri Gaurasunda, Lord Chaitanya, gave us this assurance. He said, "In this matter, if you do this, you will not be obstructed by the current of worldliness. And at this very place, you will obtain my company once again. Use every endeavor for the service of divinity. Do so from the position in which you happen to now be placed. In whatever country, in whatever age, in whatever body you may happen to be lodged, use all your endeavor for the divinity. If you carry out the command of Sri Chaitanya, there is no alternative but to discuss all those words that we have heard from the prophetic lips of our Gurudev. The only duty of a servant of Godhead is to try to do that by which one's skill in performing the service of Godhead is continuously developed. The only thing that is worth praying for is this, that our mind may more and more become attracted towards Krishna. So he goes on and he says, we do not pray for a cure of disease or for liberation by a process which may mean the simultaneous destruction of both the disease and the patient. So here he's speaking about impersonalism, where one wishes that I wish to destroy both my suffering in this world and myself. I don't wish to be a person. It is too painful to be a person. I want to be, to forget this position of personality. We approach them, this is all the different personalities to whom we pray, and we say, may you bless us that our minds may be directed towards Krishna. The people of this world pray for being the possessors of things that are other than Krishna. But the ambrosial words of Sri Gaurasunda declare that Sri Krishna is the only real possession. We are now in the grip of non-spiritual prepositions which obstruct our quest for Krishna. So it is necessary to discuss how we may be rescued from the clutches of such prepossessions. And it is for this reason that our questions are framed. We do not wish to pick another's pocket. We are above such meanness. Those who are addicted to the service of lust and anger may judge differently. But let us pay heed to what our former guru, Srila Madhavendra Puri, has said regarding our proper duty. He said, I have indulged time out of number in every form of wickedness, yielding to lust and other passions. But the outworn passions have had no pity on my poor self. They continue to trouble me shamelessly and remorselessly. O Lord of the Yadus, that is a name for Krishna, for this reason now, giving them up and knowing the truth, I have come to you to throw myself into your protection, which alone can save me from all fear. May you please employ me fully in your service. So this is the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants to give Krishna, he's Krishna, but he wants us to give knowledge of him to others. And he brings one very powerful means that we can become capable of doing that, and that is the holy name. So we can hear something now about that. By their enlightening natural potency, all words express Krishna and point to Krishna. Those words that obey us as their master and help us in the function of enjoying the things of this world, being promotive of enjoyment, are thereby separated from the divinity and therefore exhibit the natural potency that produces ignorance. The sound Krishna points to the substantial reality. In this world made of material, limiting things, the meaning that is offered by the sound Krishna and what is understood by the common run of people by the sound Krishna are neither of them the entity who is the real meaning of the sound Krishna. In other languages, such sounds as God or Allah, etc., or even in the Sanskrit language, such sounds as Ishwara, Paramatma, etc., express a certain conglomerate of distinctive power, which is an adulterated entity separate from Krishna. Those sounds fail to accommodate the full commanding potency of the sound Krishna. The full meaning of the sound Krishna may be set out thus. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He has a specific form, the concentrated embodiment of the spiritual principle of existence, cognition, and bliss. He has no beginning. He is the beginning. He is nourishing this whole world, and he is the cause of all causes. The above meaning of the sound Krishna was brought to South India by Sri Gaurasunda, Lord Chaitanya, and was made known to all the people. No other country except Bharatvarsh knows the meaning of the sound Krishna. In Bharatvarsha also there are divergent currents of thought in which the sounds Ishwara, Paramatma, Brahman, etc. have manifest themselves. These currents of thought indicate the secondary potencies of the sound Krishna, or even postulate powerlessness of the divinity. They are unable to convey the knowledge of the fullness of the meaning Krishna. Anything that is seen, heard, smelt, tasted or touched by our senses, giving rise to empiric knowledge, is an entity produced by physical nature. Krishna's name has not been used with reference to these products of physical nature. The entity Krishna is not comprehensible by knowledge dependent on material senses or absence of material senses. He is an entity who transcends physical senses and physical nature. So this is a very, he's speaking on a level that we normally don't discuss. We speak more simply than this. He wants to go very deeply into the subject matter that he is trying to convey. So sometimes I find when I am hearing his words, I lose concentration because he's so penetrating. He's like somebody who's like poking very deeply into the topic which he is speaking. And we have a tendency to touch the surface of things and then move quickly to something else. This is human nature. But when we hear these words, even though we may not actually understand their relevance, they have a potency and effect upon our cognitive faculties. They actually affect us in a way that we cannot recognize immediately. So what is this cognition, this pure cognition that he's speaking of? He says, it is very difficult to get into the inner chamber of discussion regarding I. It's very difficult to understand what I am. There stand ready at the two consecutive entrances two gatekeepers who are preventing all access to the vicinity of I. Why can't we get the sweet scent of the body of Krishna? Why does not the fifth scale note of Krishna's flute enter our ears? Why does the tumult of the streets and the noises of the busy world pour incessantly into my ears? At the present moment, the soul is asleep. In his agent, the mind, as manager of its sleeping master's concerns, is cheating me as an intermediary. I am accustomed to go by the function of the mind. The mind, whose business it is to cheat the soul by its evil counsel, is keeping me occupied on the path of selfish enjoyment. The soul is the master of the mind and the body. Speech functions as the foreman of a jury. The speech of pure cognition is of one kind, and that of non-cognition is of a different kind. The mind is non-soul. This is borne out by the Gita, where it says, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and ego are my multifold material nature. Besides these, there is another entity of a quite different kind, who is non-material. This last is no other than my manifestation as the individual soul. By means of the individual soul, the material universe is maintained. So he challenges us, he wants us to go beyond the understanding of ourselves as something of this world. And this is very difficult because this is our habit, this is the way we have seen for a very long time, and so it feels quite strange to be asked to look like this. He says, there may be companionship with the non-animate. So what is an example of the non-animate? We have companionship with the non-animate. What is the most intimate companionship we have with the non-animate? The body. And anyone can see this. Anyone who has seen a person die can understand that the life forces leave the body when the soul leaves the body. When I was in India just recently, a year or so, last year, at the beginning of last year, one very close friend of mine, she left this world. So we had traveled around the world together, arriving in Vrindavan, and there she had passed on. So I had my ticket back to Perth, Western Australia, where we live. And it was kind of an eerie feeling to take my bags onto the plane and find out that there was an empty seat right next to me, and that this last leg of the journey I was traveling alone. So it was very shortly after she had passed on, so I was still very much conscious of the loss. So I was sitting there, and then suddenly one man sat down next to me, a young man. And he was just a traveler. He wasn't anyone in particular. He'd been to India, been to Australia. He was from Israel. So he sat there, and eventually we started talking. And so I told him, it's unusual to see, you know, I'm sitting here next to you. It may sound strange, but this seat was empty because my friend has just died. So he started talking backwards and forwards. And he was asking me because he was interested. And so I explained to him, I said, it was so real. 1 minute she's talking to us, and the next minute you have there before you a lifeless body. And not only do you have a lifeless body, but you have to get rid of it very quickly. Previous to that, we were spending hours and hours and hours taking care of her, all conveniences. And now all of a sudden we want to get the body burnt as quickly as we can. So how can anyone not understand that there is a soul when somebody has seen a body and a person die and the body is left and someone has gone? And Srila Prabhupada used to say that the soul, you think, this is my father. But when the soul leaves the body, then the body is still there. You say, your father is still here. No, no, my father has gone. So then he would say, so the soul who is actually in the body of your father, you never knew. You never knew that soul. Because you identified and related on the basis of body. So all of these philosophical points became completely real in the presence of seeing somebody who was very close to you leave this world. Because it was so clear to watch. The mouth slightly opens, if they're fortunate, and they leave. And you can almost feel the air as they move invisibly from that place. So this is non-animate, the body. When the body, soul is gone, the body is lifeless. It will no longer call you. It will no longer wave to you. It will no longer laugh if you tell a joke. It's like a dead, inanimate thing. But because the soul is occupying that body, the body is so attractive. And therefore we become attracted to different people and different relations. But actually the body is non-animate. So he says there may be companionship with the non-animate. This is called bad company. This bad companionship is practiced by means of the physical body and the ignorant mind. It is necessary to give up this bad company. So what he is saying here is not that you should give up your body. You should not take care of your body. But you should understand the body as being a place that you are presently lodged. That you are the soul. And so time and time and time again I find myself, I have to go back in my mind to that moment that you see the person, the soul, leave the body. And even though you don't see with your eyes any change, there's no perceptible, visible departure, it's completely lifeless after that. That is the juncture where you can see soul and body separately. He says, if we do so, if we give up this bad company, then our real self, whose nature it is to be attracted by Krishna, experiences the direct attraction of Krishna. If we give up this sense of identity with the mind and body, if we wish to do this, then we can gradually become very much attracted to Krishna. Krishna attracts the pure cognition. Exclusive devotion is a characteristic of pure cognition. One has no access to the spiritual realm till this quality of exclusive devotion makes its appearance. So these are heavy words. We think that. Why? I don't believe that. But we can think for a moment. If we wish, we can remain in this world, life after life after life. And some people believe that there is only one life. But there are so many questions that come into the mind of a scientific inquirer that cannot be satisfied by this theory. Because why this and why that, and why do some people suffer, and why does this person get this, and it seems very unfair, God seems very unfair. If you cram all of experience and all your chances for eternality into one short life, it seems very unreasonable. So we do not accept that idea. We accept that the soul, being eternal, is on a journey back home, is on a journey towards Krishna. And there's three ways in which a soul can serve. The soul always is serving Krishna because the soul is part of Krishna. They can serve lovingly, voluntarily. They can serve apathetically. Or they can serve in defiance, unwillingly, and they can serve without any knowledge that they are serving Krishna at all. But we always, always, always remain a servant. So this, as we become aware of this, and we wish to offer our services to Krishna with devotion and love and affection and gratitude, when this comes to the foreground of our consciousness, then the service becomes palatable. When the service is being carried on in ignorance, then we don't even know that we're serving anyone. We think that we're actually independently in charge of ourselves. So I want to read you another quote. We have only a couple more moments. We live in the Kali Yuga. This is an age of strife. So it happens that the self-luminous path of pure devotion is completely covered up by millions and millions of thorns in the shape of foolish argumentations and worldly wranglings. In these circumstances, it is absolutely impossible to have the knowledge of pure devotion without the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself. He is the Godhead. It is impossible only to know him in spirit. The atomic theory of the world knows nothing of his service. So we have to know him. We have to follow his teachings. We have to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is not of this world. It is not an expression like, as he was saying earlier, is when we say God, God is a very, like we were just recently, we were preparing some display boards to introduce some concepts, Vedic concepts for a display. So as we went through the different words that we were using, we could understand that that word in the mind of others held a different meaning than it holds in the form of our particular teachings. Words such as transcendental. Transcendental, we were in Perth, we saw there was a big exhibit, art exhibit on, and it was named Seeking Transcendence. So we went to see it to get some ideas of display, and we picked up the little pamphlet that went with it, and they explained in there that seeking transcendence means to seek something that gives you some feeling of the heart, or it takes you above the rationality, the intellect, or it gives you some peace or a nice feeling. This is transcendence. And then they go so far as to show just regular paintings of all kinds of things, and then explain how this is seeking transcendence. So everything could be incorporated under the seeking transcendence. And there was one artist, and he was painting, what was it, something very strange. And they explained in there that actually you may wonder how you can put these pictures of, I don't know what they were, but it was very strange. You can put this under the heading of seeking transcendence. We can say that he was not exactly able to achieve transcendence because of his compulsivity of his nature and his bad habits, but he was seeking transcendence, and he inspires us that we too can seek transcendence. So therefore this word transcendence has one particular meaning. It's giving the meaning of ignorance. In the way they're using it, it's creating ignorance by the use of a word that can be turned in another direction and it can illuminate one. So transcendence means beyond the whole material plane. Transcendence means, transcendental means it is spiritual. Spiritual means it is eternal. But again, the word spiritual, nowadays this word too is a very, very commonly used word, and it means something that gives you a good feeling. It keeps your spirits up. Or it means somebody who can contact spirits. If you can contact spirits, then you're a spiritualist. So this again, there's a deluding aspect to the word, or there is an illuminating aspect to the word, depending on the individual and what they wish to receive. So by chanting Hare Krishna, by chanting Krishna's names, we become established in the truth. And as we become established in that way, then we can understand step by step that everything, everything in this world belongs to Krishna. Everything is His, and everything ultimately is coming from Him. And that as we develop our mood of love and our mood of service, because these were two very important aspects of Lord Chaitanya's teachings, that you should develop a mood of love for Krishna. Not only reverence and awe, but actually intimate love. You should consider that you can be His intimate servant, not a servant that stands in great respect of God, but He should be your most dearest loved one. Because for the soul, that is the nature of the relationship between the soul and the Lord. So by chanting Hare Krishna, this can be possible. I'd like to finish at this particular point because we're trying to keep for the schedule for this evening. If there are any questions, I can try and answer them. Apology for the abbreviation of the subject matter, but perhaps still you can gain something from hearing his very strong transcendental words. Any questions? Yes. Do you have a question?
I was just going to ask, where is this book available?
You can get it in Mayapur. I don't know anywhere else that it's actually available. You can get it at the Chaitanya Mart. They have this book and there's a couple of other books, but the translation is not ideal, but they're helpful for getting acquainted with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his teachings. And of course there's a very easy to read book which was published by Rupa Vilas Prabhu called A Ray of Vishnu, and in there are some of his words selected sections that are easy. The English is very readable. So you can begin with that text and then you can get this one.
There are very few books of Siddhanta Swami Prabhupada's books.
Teachings.
Why is BBT not publishing this?
Because it's in the hands of the Gaudiya Math. Because this is the Gaudiya Math's publication, so it's from the generation before us, so to speak. Yes?
Why is sleep? I thought it means soul.
What? Say again?
Why the word is spirit?
Yes.
I thought it meant soul.
It means soul for those who have that understanding.
Yeah, and how the what do you call it, psychic.
Yes.
You know, when they leave the psychic ability and all those things, they say that they contact the spirit.
Yeah, that's not the soul.
So what is the meaning of the spirit?
Well, as we heard, that the pure soul has two guards. It is very hard to get to the essence of who I am. And the outer guard is, of course, the material body, that I am this. And the second one is the subtle body, like two envelopes. The soul is within two envelopes, a subtle envelope and then a gross envelope. So we know, from the Vedic culture, that if somebody acts in a particular way and he doesn't get a gross body, then he can remain active on the subtle platform, or even somebody can have a gross body and remain active on the subtle plane if he has such mystic powers. So a person who has cultivated refined and he has an interest in developing his subtle powers, the mind, the intelligence, the subtle ego like that, he can move in that way. Even yogis can do that. They can create more forms of themselves. They can be visible in one place and invisible in another place, and they can do so many things because they can manipulate the subtle laws of nature. But the ordinary person doesn't have any access to that. So therefore, when somebody has some potency, some psychic potency, people call that spirit. But that understanding of spirit is not referencing the soul. It's referencing to the subtle aspect of a man or a woman. Yes?
Just from basically the Pranam Mantra, we get the impression that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was following the conjugal mallow. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
And, for a person to be at that level of rasa, it is unusually harsh, isn't it, in his words and chopping technique?
Well, the reason for that is because he was acting on behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one person, say, who can be acting on behalf of somebody, can say I am managing this particular retreat. I can tell one person, you should go into the kitchen and you should cook. You should go and give the class. You should go and clean the ashram over there. You should do so many different things. And the person who goes to do the different function, if he's working under the order of the superior, then there's no impediment to his particular nature, his inner nature, by the function or activity that he's performing. He's performing a particular service at a particular time. So his service has to be seen. His relationship with Radha and Krishna is one thing. His relationship with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is another thing. So he's serving. In this capacity, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. So the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requires to cut down so many wrong understandings before the right understanding can actually be planted. So it's often said that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used very strong words to chop down so many wrong theories, especially in India. And then Srila Prabhupada, we hear that in his Lilamrita, planting the seed. He went all over the world and threw seeds. So much so that we see almost all the spiritual movements that have come out from the Gaudiya line, other than ISKCON, they all have their original seeds have come from Srila Prabhupada's preaching. Like if you go and you see devotees may move here, go there, there's so many different groups now because as things spread, they spread in so many different ways for different reasons of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's will. But Srila Prabhupada threw the seeds and the seeds are coming up in their various places. So someone can say the same thing. They can say, Srila Prabhupada, you say that he is supposed to be a worshipper of Radha and Krishna. This should be very sweet. But why does he spend so much time talking, you're not your body, you're not your body, scientists are bad, and challenging? How can this be? So one has to look at the two different functions. The function within the pastimes of Radha and Krishna is not disproved by the function within the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And gradually, as one continues to chant, one understands that the understanding of the taste and mellow of Radha and Krishna's pastimes is something that is not what one preaches. It is what one tastes through the chanting process. So he's asking us to take up the chanting, and he's trying to discredit anything that we may be holding on to in favor, instead of that, as his the primary basis to give us that opportunity. But generally, because we're speaking for these few days on the particular contribution of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we're asked to take ourselves back into time to appreciate his contribution. But of course, in a general day-to-day way, we speak from the perspective of Srila Prabhupada's transcendental message, which gives us our essence. But there's no difference between what each of these personalities is trying to give. And the acts and whatever else they bring to bear upon us is all needed by us, as we have to gradually see. And therefore then we can take from each one of these personalities their gift, which will allow us also to proceed in serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to a higher and higher level of sincerity and devotion.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
I actually heard in one of the classes that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was Paramhansa. Are all the acharyas supposed to be Paramhansa, or there are some Paramhansa, some not?
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the one who designated the Guru Parampara that we follow. So he listed a lineage of Gurus in the Guru Parampara that are all Paramhansas. But that does not mean that he was saying that we can only serve Paramhansa, but he was for our benefit, so that we can approach these personalities and receive their mercy. He only listed the Paramhansas. So an acharya of this quality, of Srila Prabhupada's quality or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's quality, is recognizable as extremely rare and exalted. And our position as disciples, or as those who are asked on their behalf to carry on their work, has to be one of following their order. That they say you do this, then you do it. And so in that sense, we don't make a heavy differentiation that only a Paramahansa can do this. Because as I was saying yesterday, this is actually the gift of Srila Prabhupada, that he said anyone can do it. And he had people coming straight off the street as degraded and intoxicated as you could imagine. That he had people that he was living with that I wouldn't live with. And he was so cultured. He was living with people who were taking LSD. He was living with people who were mad. But he was transcendental to that. And he was prepared to engage anyone, because this was also part of Lord Chaitanya's. And he said it's not one man's work. The spreading of Krishna consciousness will be done by many. So there will have to come more Paramhansas to do great work, because if this is to be done in the next 10,000 years that Krishna consciousness is just spread all over the world, I'm sure there are more people waiting in the wings. Even Srila Prabhupada said that it is not our families, our children, he said they will be somewhat contaminated by their association with ourselves. But in our children's children's time, then he said, Nitya Siddha devotees will appear. So I think what we should do, what we can in this life, if we're forced to come back, it's not a punishment. We may see some amazing things, because it is bound to spread. It's not one generation's work. It's not one lifetime's work. It's many lifetimes' work. There's one wonderful story I'll tell you about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he built the temple, he had one of his disciples responsible for building the temple at the Yogapit, Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. And now when we go there, we think it's a small temple. It's a nice temple, but it's not a very big temple. But in the time when it was made, I was reading one account of one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples, and he said, we have built this skyscraper temple, and it's only one floor and a very big point. And I went back to the picture and thought, skyscraper temple? That's a skyscraper. But they had never been anywhere, and I don't know how many skyscrapers there were in those days, but they had never been to America. They didn't know what a skyscraper was. So he said, we have built this skyscraper temple. So in order to inaugurate the birthplace, because it was quite controversial, because there were other people who were saying, no, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya is here, or it's here in our temple, and so on and so forth. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, from his very, very powerful position, and from his vast knowledge, and from his sense of responsibility, and as his pure transcendental understanding, he worked very hard to establish that this was the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, given all evidence, not just as a sectarian idea. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur continued with the struggle after Bhaktivinoda Thakur left, when there was legal cases and so forth where people didn't accept this. So when he was making the opening of this temple, he decided that he would invite Sir John Anderson, who was the governor of Bengal at that time, to come to inaugurate this temple, which at that time must have been amazing, because there was nothing else in Mayapur. Now we go, there's our big complex, and so the yoga pit is small compared. So when he was inviting him, he told his disciples, he's coming, he's an Englishman, he's not used to vegetarian food. So you should bring cooks here from Calcutta so they can cook meat for him. And so one of his disciples said to him, Srila Prabhupada, won't this look a little bit bad for the Gaudiya Math if we do something like this? And he said, I have already decided this hundreds of lifetimes ago. I've already considered this matter hundreds of lifetimes ago. And he said, I am prepared to do anything, whatever it takes, to spread the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And accordingly, they didn't need that, because naturally he came and he was very respectful and he was prepared to take the prasad that was offered to him. But he was prepared to do anything. When he said, when you go to the West, you make hostels and you tell them to chant Hare Krishna. They can have wine and meat, no problem, but they must chant Hare Krishna. The same thing. I was prepared. He said, I have so much faith in the power of the holy name. So we can't imitate that. We can't say, oh, he said this, so we can do this. We haven't deliberated on this subject for 100 lifetimes and come to this very deep faith. We would be doing something imitative. But this was how strong he was. So not an ordinary person. Very extraordinary person. Yes. Yes. So Rupa Goswami was taught by Lord Chaitanya the science of rasa, or transcendental taste. He was taught all about how to differentiate between material rasa, the taste of enjoyment in the material world, and transcendental rasa. It's a very deep and a subtle subject. Srila Jiva Goswami, he was also given his responsibilities. He established the philosophical basis through his sandarbhas of the Gaudiya Vaishnav Srila Jiva Goswami. But Srila Rupa Goswami, he especially, through first the Nectar of Devotion and then other books that go on from there, he taught the science of rasa. So this was the particular nature of Srila Jiva Goswami. So it's interesting, because as you're saying, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, at least in what we're left with, he's just busy cutting and chopping, and he doesn't seem very mellow at all. He's very strong and very forceful. But he was following in that line, which meant that internally he had this same mood. And so he spoke on this, but only rarely, because he was primarily doing this work of establishing. But Srila Rupa Goswami is also, of course, we are called Rupanugas, or followers of Rupa Goswami, because Srila Rupa Goswami was so dear to Lord Chaitanya, and he was, as I said, the one that was chosen to present this particular aspect of the science. So it's not that we are not followers of Jiva Goswami, but Jiva Goswami or Sanatana Goswami all thought of themselves as Rupanugas. They all thought of themselves as followers of Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami's position is very preeminent. And on the transcendental plane of Krishna Leela, Sri Rupa Goswami is Sri Rupa Manjari. And Sri Rupa Manjari, she is the primary of all the Manjari assistants of Radha and Krishna. So all the other Manjaris, they serve Rupa Manjari. when they appear, all the associates of Radha and Krishna appear in the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they assume male forms and they serve as devotees of Radha and Krishna. So this is a very, Prabhupada said, a postgraduate subject matter, something we cannot go into deeply at this time, but that is to answer your question. Yes. Yeah, there's lineages of, there are lineages of Nityananda Prabhu, there's lineages of Advaita Acharya, there are lineages of, family lineages of many people. So it's not the, we only know a certain aspect of Krishna consciousness in ISKCON society, but since the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there is all sorts of things going on from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years practically. But we come in this particular line. So we accept the teachings in that way. Any more points? Yes.
Mataji, when I was in Toronto, we were doing some programs.
Yes.
And we had one outsider attend the program who was originally within ISKCON. And he was mentioning that, he was asking a question to me. Can you explain why in the Bhagavad Gita, when you open the page of descending succession, why is it mentioned in that way? Why could it not have been different if it was a siksha lineage and not a diksha lineage?
Well, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote down the lineage. So he could have gone, as a diksha, he could have gone to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. He would be next. And then he would have gone along the lineage from Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj. But because he appeared by the will and the desire of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, so he had both, diksha, shiksha. So he couldn't but put Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur as the person who he was primarily serving. And then he could not but put Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj as the person he was also serving. And so from there then he delineated with the primary personalities. So we can say we could put anyone we want, but who are we to judge? So when people can argue, why don't we do this, why don't we do that, let's change this, let's change that, then you're talking about people who are on the relative platform, who are eligible only by the flickering thoughts of their mind. But this is a personality who is establishing something that is going to go on for hundreds and hundreds of years. So we're best asked to follow it rather than to challenge it. People can say, why is Krishna blue? You know, why can't Krishna be yellow? Why can't this? I want this. I prefer this. But the transcendental entity is not somebody who comes under our jurisdiction. He's beyond our jurisdiction. So this is why so much is said in here to get you to understand that God doesn't come within your control. He's cutting these misconceptions. Without all that cutting done, then we can sit around and say, why not this? Yes, and why not that? And I think this, and you think that. And we'll get nowhere in terms of actually understanding transcendental subject matters because there's no authority. So this is the tendency in the age of Kali that we're living. But this is why he delineated something, and we will become very effective if we follow that. And gradually we can understand why and how and what he is doing. But whether we understand or don't understand, our main business is to actually try to follow the line in which we have received transcendental knowledge, because then it will make it more and more realizable by us. This is my understanding. We can question, but we cannot understand the answers. Something like that. All right, I think we should stop. We're supposed to stop about half an hour ago. Anyway, thank you very much.